It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. After this week's icy storm, we'll talk about dealing with ice-covered trees and shrubs, caring for houseplants during the winter months, and we'll look ahead towards spring. Ah, yes, it's a good time to start ordering flower and vegetable seeds. Extension horticulturists Richard Giron and Lyndon Nave will be here to answer your questions about plants you want to grow or grow better. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, just after the news. And this is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander sitting in for Greg Shanley. Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Lyndon Nave will answer your questions about the plants in your life, whatever you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Hello, Richard and Linda. How are you today?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, it's good.
We skated over to the studio.
That's what I was going to start out with. Iowa's gone through a big week of ice storms, freezing drizzle, ice coating trees and shrubs. The weight of the ice is probably causing limbs to break off. So what will be the long-term effect on these plants?
Well, they're going to have to basically let the ice melt first and then maybe go out and evaluate the trees. And if they see damage to the trunk of the tree, severe damage, they may have to take that tree down. But before they do that, they may want to consult with an arborist and have them come out and look and get a professional opinion. But if you have damage to the trunk of the tree, that may weaken it so that it's really not a solid, safe tree anymore. So if it's just a branch, you can cut the branch off, that type of thing. But if you have a tree that suffers some major trunk damage, you may have to take it down.
What about shrubs?
I don't think you're going to see too much problems there. You might have some broken limbs, but they can repair themselves. They'll send up new shoots next spring. So that's not going to be a long-term problem. It's a short-term problem. It may not look real nice and full and balanced next year, but it'll grow new shoots and it'll be fine eventually. So the bigger concern would be the trees because some of those, like I said, if you have some trunk damage, you may have to take the tree down.
And what about stunting growth or preventing or somehow impacting their ability to blossom in the spring?
Nope, no problem there.
Okay.
The main thing is the weight of the actual ice. And so even though you have this tree or shrub encased in ice, that doesn't hurt it. It's fine. It's basically the weight that will cause it to break, and that's the major problem. So hopefully today or tomorrow, it's going to get above freezing and melt.
Okay. We'll go to our first caller on Horticulture Day once again. Richard Giron and Linda Nave, our extension horticulturists, are taking your calls at 1-866-780-9100. And Randy is on the line from Grinnell. Hello, Randy. What's your question?
I'd like to know how and when to graft new buds on pear trees from a different, like a Shiro to a Bohemian plum. When do I start doing that? And what kind of book would I get to read all the information on doing that?
I would probably go down to your local library and look for something under the subject of plant propagation. And if you find a good plant propagation book, they'll talk about various aspects of growing plants from seeds and cuttings, but also by grafting. And there are various grafting methods, and you can look through there and see what you want to do. I would say for Iowans, one of the easier ones to do would be something like an apple, where you get an apple rootstock, you get a small branch from a desirable apple tree, and then you graft those two. And those are pretty easy to do. Some of the other ones are more difficult. But
How about the plums?
Well,
it's been done. They do bud grafting with that.
Yeah, it's typically budding with those. And that's where you just take a single bud from the desired variety and then place that on a plum rootstock.
Like I said, a Shiro plum, could you graft it onto a purple plum tree?
I would assume you could, but I can't be certain of that.
What time of year does that start, in March?
It all depends upon the method that you do. There are various grafting and budding methods, and depending on which one you do, that determines the actual timing of this operation. So I would just get a good book, look through there, and look at some of these methods and then decide what you want to do.
Either that, or if you're online, you could Google grafting fruit trees, and chances are you'll come up with a number of links to extension publications out there. Select those that are, Midwest, Northeast publications that talk about grafting, because the system would be different in a colder climate than some of the less hardy plants in the southern. But
right. So if you go to Google and type in grafting fruit trees, and then after that leave a space and then type in S-I-T-E and then a colon and then E-D-U. And that basically filters all the information and just pulls out information from educational institutions like Iowa State and other state universities.
Well,
so that's a nice little...
One more time.
It's actually S as in Sam.
Yeah.
I, T as in Tom, E, and then a colon, and then E-D-U. And that basically brings up only educational information, which is great.
Well, I would tell people that are thinking about planting trees, this would be the perfect time to see what kind of trees survive in a bad icy condition. That should dictate to them what kind of trees they might want to plant for future, like, hardwoods instead of those worthless soft maples.
Yeah. Well, some trees, right, are much more prone to storm damage, whether it's a thunderstorm or an ice storm. And yes, certain trees like silver maples are very prone to that. On the other hand, you have trees like most of the oaks, which tend to be very sturdy, very strong, and much less prone to breakage. So when you're buying a tree this spring, consider what can happen in Iowa, either in the summer or winter, and make an appropriate choice.
Thanks, Randy. Yeah,
another
go ahead.
Another thing to think about at this time is, and not just this time, but observe this time of year, is if you have a tree in your landscape that is old, maybe have weak crotch angles, or maybe have some decay going on in the branch intersections, the crotch angles. These are hazard trees that you might want to consider taking down before the future ice storm takes it down. So you can see the trees that are most damaged are those that were one time classified as hazard trees because they had some injury, some decay going on inside those trees. So
right, some type of defect.
Uh-huh.
That was actually there that they could see, but they didn't do anything, and now it's down.
Exactly. So that's preventative medicine, you might say, for next year. Take a look at the trees in your landscape, and if you have some that you'd classify or an arborist would classify as a hazard tree, it might be well worth it to take it down before an ice storm takes it down on your house.
That's a very good point. We appreciate Randy calling in. He's left now, but his original question was about grafting. So when people want to graft plants, different plants to other plants, they're just looking for a certain variety, or they want to create a certain kind of fruit? Is that what's going on there?
Well, they might have, for example, they might have a fruit tree in their yard, and they have no idea what it is. And so in that situation, they can't buy another tree because they're not quite sure what it is. So what they can do is they can actually obtain some apple rootstocks and take a branch from that tree and graft that onto the rootstock and have the same tree. Without knowing what exactly it is. So if they knew what it was, they could simply go to the garden center and buy another variety. But if you have something like an apple tree and you really don't know what it is, that way you can ensure you still have the tree.
Okay.
Yeah, and another thing people do is they have one tree and they find they're not getting, it's not very fruitful because you need, in many cases with fruit trees, a pollinator variety. So what they'll do is they'll graft a pollinator variety right into their fruit tree that they have, so that some of the blossoms come out of a different variety, that when the bees find that branch, they'll pollinate They'll take the pollen from that branch and move it over to their desired variety. So they mm-hmm. add a pollinator in there. And there used to be a lot of trees that were five in ones you'd see advertised in some of the supplements. So you get five different varieties mm-hmm. on one tree.
Those are more of a novelty, though.
They are a very big novelty. But that's how they acquired that five in one tree, is through grafting process. And again, those graft unions are weaker than your standard branches. And so if there's going to be a stress point, that will be it if there's an ice storm.
I see. Okay. Well, you're listening to Linda Nave and Richard Geron on Horticulture Day, our extension horticulturists. If you have a question for them, call in at 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. We'll go to Susie in Ames now. Susie, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Thanks. I'm seriously concerned with the damage that rabbits seem to be doing. I have a 30-year-old group of dwarf Korean lilacs and maybe 15-year-old oigelias, and the rabbits are eating the bark off the lower trunk and branches.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to stop this?
About the only thing you can do is actually put something between the rabbits and the plant, and that's basically like chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth. They have been causing a lot of damage the last few weeks. With the deep snow cover, with the ice covering the ground, there's no way they can find anything on the ground, so that anything that sticks up above the snow and the ice is fair game. And so they go after certain plants more so than others. But right now, they're probably so hungry, they'll probably eat anything. Lilacs typically aren't their first choice, but if they're so hungry, they'll eat anything. So I would try to get some chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth around my plants as soon as possible, maybe hopefully tomorrow or Sunday, and maybe prevent additional damage. But that's the best way of doing it. There are some rabbit repellents that you can buy, but they're not always reliable. Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But if you have fencing around it where they physically can't reach the plants, that does work.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thanks for calling, Susie. Are there sturdy plants that you'd suggest to plant in the spring to make it through the winter, maybe to support some of these creatures or to make sure that they don't get to the plant?
Well, if you're planting a small tree in the spring, let's say, for example, a crab apple or a fruit tree, typically what I do when I'm done planting is I'll take some hardware cloth and make a cylinder and put that around the trunk where the actual cylinder is about an inch away from the trunk, and support it with some sturdy stakes and basically leave that in place for maybe 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. I don't take it off. I just leave it, and that can stay there and prevent any rabbit damage or even maybe some damage from mice.
We're going to take a short break, but Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron and Linda Nave will be here to answer your questions when we return. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander sitting in for Greg Shanley, and our Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron and Linda Nave are here to answer your questions about the plants in your life. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Well, we talked a bit about what's going on in the outside of the world and what to think about. How about indoor plants, caring for house plants during this time of year? What are some tips that we should be mindful of?
Well, some of the things we need to think about is, first of all, the light levels in your home. You'll find that perhaps if your plants are on the north side or the west side, they're maybe not getting as much light as they need. You might want to move them to a south window where it's a little bit brighter. So light levels are critical at this time of year, as well as water and moisture needs. You could find two things going on. You could find the fact that they're not growing much and not using much water, but chances are you're going to find that they dry out faster and maybe needing some more moisture because we are having our homes are drier this time of year. So be leery and be on the lookout for the water needs and the light needs of your houseplants at this time. Third thing to think about are the insect pests, because there are several insect pests that tend to like hot, warm, dry conditions, and we see a buildup of things like spider mites. We get mealy bugs that might come on. We have aphids that might be coming on your plants, and you don't see them until the populations get high. So typically, these are the pests that we see. Just be on the lookout for those. Don't wait until the problem gets so far out of hand you need to discard the plant. So with spider mites, what we're looking at is a mottled foliage. The growth isn't as glossy as it once was. You'll see some small webbing around the leaves and the intersections of the leaves and the stems at the nodes there. And in that case, what you need to do is a good blast of water on the foliage. If you can get that under a shower or a sink and spray it good, that knocks the spider mites off. There are some indoor pesticide, insecticide that you could use carefully. Read the label instructions. Another pest that we see that sucks the plant juices, like the spider mite, would be the mealy bug, and they're very visible. They have they're sort of a white color, but they leave this cottony mass on the plants. And again, they can be washed off, wiped off. That's a good measure to reduce the populations, but you still may have to treat them later. So pest problems can become a real issue. And when it comes to fertilizing, people ask, well, should I be fertilizing my houseplants at this time? Typically, we say don't fertilize them during the winter months. They're not actively growing. Those fertilizer salts will build up in the soil and can create some problems with your plants. So you're better off not fertilizing when the light levels are so low and the plants aren't actively growing.
And are there any kind of non-traditional pesticides, like maybe using vinegar or anything of that nature, rather than going to something that's very commercial oriented?
There are. There's insecticidal soaps that are effective on these kind of pests. Soft-bodied insects, you can find that under the trade name Safer's insecticidal soap. There are some recipes out there, home recipes for insecticidal soap, and they say 5 tablespoons per gallon of water sprayed on the plant. But right now, we really don't know what kind of other ingredients are in our soap, our detergents, like our dishwashing detergents. So there's so many additives, such as antibacterials, wetting agents, a lot of different things that may be harmful to our plants. So we don't just have your basic detergents anymore to make insecticidal soap. So my recommendation would be spend the little extra dollars and get a safe, usable product at the garden centers.
Okay, you're listening to Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day today. We're speaking with Linda Knave and Richard Geron, our Extension horticulturists. If you have questions for them, call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You know, it's we do have a question here from Suzanne in Coralville. Suzanne, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Welcome to the program. What's your question?
I have a miniature pomegranate tree. This is the second year I've had it. I put it outdoors in the summer, and it's gorgeous. And then in the winter, I bring it in. And this year, when I brought it in, it lost all its leaves. Then I kept watering it, even though it looked dead, and the leaves all came back. Now they're all falling off again. What can I do?
Well, let's start with your first problem, and that's just a natural occurrence. When your pomegranate was growing outside, it was very accustomed to and adjusted to high light levels. And when the plant adjusts to high light levels, they add an additional layer of cells to protect their chlorophyll from high light intensities. So it's sort of like a filter or a shade, an internal shade for their leaves. Well, when you brought that miniature pomegranate indoors, the light levels were significantly lower, and they weren't able to manufacture the foods that they needed quite as efficiently in their leaves because of that extra layer, that shade that was still on the plant in the plant's leaves. So what the plant did is it shed all of its high light leaves and then remanufactured low light leaves. And you might see a little bit of difference if you were looking very carefully. If you looked under a microscope, you might see the leaf is thinner, not as many layers of cells. So that's how it reacted to its original. Now, if there have been any changes in light levels over the last couple months. It could have been just our winter's been dreary, not as much light coming in again, so we dropped a little bit more light level. Or with the reflection out of the snow coming into your window, you may have had brighter light than what you had previously. So the light level changes there. What I would do is I would not give it up for lost, just unless you had an insect problem that caused the leaves to drop. Did you see any changes in...
Not at all.
My guess is just a physiological response within that plant.
Would it help if I used a grow light and...
Definitely, yes.
Augmented the light.
Uh-huh, it would. Okay. It would give it a more consistent light level than the fluctuating light levels that we're getting. It would. Just be sure if you get a grow light that you get a grow light and put it within 6 to 12 inches of your plant. If you put a plant under a grow light several feet away, you're not going to get the benefit from that grow light. So it has to be close to the lights themselves.
Very good. Now, what about fertilizing it?
I would not fertilize it. Again, the plant will be growing some. It'll tell you if it needs fertilizer. If the new leaves come out looking a little pale, a little chlorotic, then I would go ahead and fertilize at a half strength to begin with.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for calling in, Suzanne. We appreciate it. We'll go to another caller here, Jeremy in Dubuque. Welcome to the program, Jeremy. What's your question?
My wife and I were going to plant some privacy hedges around our property, and we were just wondering, we're kind of stuck between a few different choices, and we were just going to call and see what you would recommend for privacy hedges.
Now, when you say privacy hedge, you mean what kind of criteria do you have as far as height?
We were thinking maybe 5-6 foot.
Okay. And do you want this to be effective year-round?
Yeah.
Okay. If you want it to be year-round, then it'd have to be some type of evergreen.
Okay.
Because if you had, let's say, for example, maybe a dogwood hedge or a lilac hedge, they would drop their leaves in the fall, and they're not very effective.
Right.
But if you had a evergreen hedge, then they would be effective year-round.
Okay.
So I would think, first off, maybe... some variety of arborvitae.
Okay.
That'd be my first thought, because you have a number of varieties. These varieties differ in height and spread, and you could find something that would probably grow about 6 foot tall and provide that. Now, you would need quite a few plants because they don't get very wide,
but
they would provide that that type of screening year-round.
Okay.
Junipers would be another choice, but I think my first choice would be the arborvitae.
Okay, and do those? We were looking for something that grows pretty fast that would get established quickly. Is that something that grows pretty fast? Or
well, they don't grow that fast, but you would have the option of buying different sizes at a garden center. I mean, you might be able to buy it something 2 foot tall, something 3 foot tall, something 5 or 6 foot tall. So you do have that option. So that would be something that I would look at next spring.
We're going to have to take a five-minute break here. Thanks, Jeremy. We appreciate it. Good luck. We'll be back. Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Linda Nave will be here to answer your questions about the plants in your life. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander sitting in for Greg Shanley, and it's Horticulture Day, and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Linda Nave are here to answer your questions about plants you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email us at talkatiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And James from Des Moines is on the line. James, what's your question for Horticulture Day?
Well, I have a large pine tree and a smaller one in the front yard, and they both, the limbs are being taken down to the ground, and then my dense yews look terrible between the deer and the ice.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to...
Well, I think the weather will take care of the ice sometime in the next 24 hours, so you don't have to worry about that. As far as the rabbits or deer or whatever, again, fencing is the best way to prevent any damage to those plants. So,
how about stimulating a rebound?
Excuse me?
How about stimulating a rebound from this moribund season?
Oh, I think they'll be okay. You don't really have to fertilize most trees and shrubs. That we're very fortunate. We have very good soils here in Iowa as far as fertility-wise, and so there's typically no need to fertilize them. So if we have a nice spring and some good rainfall, they should be okay. If you want to fertilize lightly, you can. That's okay. Just don't fertilize a lot. And I would probably just use like a typical garden fertilizer, like a 10-10-10, and just broadcast a small amount of that around the plants early next spring, probably sometime in April.
How about tree spikes?
No, I probably wouldn't. The fertilizer spikes are very convenient, but when you pound those into the ground, only a small percentage of the roots are close to those spikes, and so the rest of them don't get it. So if I was going to fertilize, I would just go out with a granular fertilizer and just kind of sprinkle it around the plant by hand.
What did you say, a 10-10 what?
10-10-10.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, James. We appreciate it. Yeah, you too. Have a good day. And William now is in Davenport. William, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm trying to grow a mesquite tree indoors here in Davenport.
Mm.
We have our cage here at my retirement home that the lights are on 24 hours a day. I'm wondering if that's going to be a problem for that tree.
That's found in the southwest, isn't it, the mesquite tree?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I got some mesquite seeds to sprout.
Mm-hmm.
That I brought up from Texas.
Well, most plants would like a natural dark period, so I'm not sure how it's going to adapt to light 24 hours a day. I don't know. Most plants, though, do like or prefer a dark period.
They won't die. Let's just put it that way. They won't die. Oftentimes, the light duration affects things such as flowering, fruiting, their maturation, but as far as general growth, they do like a rest period, but it's not going to kill them. It might have some effect that way, but I don't know the flowering or the fruiting habit of a mesquite plant, so whether it's a photoperiodic plant or not, and if that's even any concern to you, but that's usually what affects many plants. But
the tree isn't flourishing. I just wondered whether that was having some effect. What kind of a fertilizer would you recommend for a tree?
How tall is your little tree?
Pardon?
How tall is it?
Oh, it's about 3 feet.
What size container is it growing in?
Oh, I got it in about, it's over 2 feet in diameter and 2 feet deep.
I would just use a water-soluble product, whatever you choose, like Miracle-Gro, and use a fairly dilute solution. I'd probably maybe wait on that and maybe start doing that maybe sometime in March or April.
Okay.
Is the plant totally living under artificial lights? Is there any natural light coming in through windows at all?
Oh, yeah. I've got it in front of the window, so it's getting natural light. During whatever natural period we have. It's on the kind of the southeast corner. Southeast exposure.
Well, that's the best you can do for indoors, and just enjoy the plant. It sounds like you've got a good little hobby going there with that. And
I'm also trying to get a Norfolk Island pine to survive. I lost one a couple years ago, and I'm just wondering whether one needs to put fertilizer. Again, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
If it's light all the time, maybe that would be compromised on the
I think with the Norfolk Island pine, my guess would be that the biggest problem with those is during the winter months, the air indoors tends to be very dry. They're not fond of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if during that period, if they were also not watered properly, Let's say they get too dry. That would be also stressful. And so the wintertime typically is a very tough time for the Norfolk Island pine. So if you have a poor environment, if they receive poor care, I could see where the plant might actually decline and die.
Okay. Well, thank you for your help.
Thanks.
Have a good day. Enjoy
you too.
Program.
Thanks very much, William. We appreciate it. I hope he has luck with the mesquite and the Norfolk pine. If you have questions for Extension Horticulturists Richard Giron and Linda Nave today, call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. One thing I'd like to ask you is there going to be any harm to our lawns from the sidewalk salt? That's we put on?
Probably not a great deal. Actually, you can have damage to trees and shrubs, too. But the key as far as using a de-icing salt is to use it prudently. Don't put on too much. Basically, the purpose of the de-icing salt is to break the bond between the ice and the cement. And once that bond is broken, then you need to basically shovel off the ice and snow. And if you use quite a bit, the best thing to do would be to wait till spring, and then as soon as the ice and snow melt and the ground thaws out, then at that point, if you think you've used a lot of salt, you can go out with a hose and very heavily water the areas near the driveway and the sidewalk, and that will basically kind of flush out the salt, and therefore the plant shouldn't really suffer greatly.
Okay. We have a caller in from Mike in Maquoketa. Welcome to the program, Mike. What's your question?
I'm not sure what kind of bush it is. I think it's called like a plum. It gets purple leaves.
Okay.
When can I prune that, and how far can I take that down to the ground without really hurting it?
Well, as far as pruning most of your shrubs, typically late winter, early spring is the best time to do that. Typically March, early April, before the actual plant leaves out. And as far as pruning, it all depends upon what you're trying to achieve. I don't think I would cut out more than a third of the plant if I was pruning it.
Okay. It's not a flower, so if I cut the branches, it's not going to flower then, right?
Right. If you prune in the spring, then it's not going to bloom as much. Right. Correct.
All righty. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Mike. We'll go next to, is it Tarek in Des Moines?
Yes, Tarek Malik from Des Moines, Iowa.
Hi, Tarek. What's your question?
Well, I've got a bonsai tree. It's fairly small. It's about eight inches tall, about 8 inches wide. It's a Brazilian rain tree, and it's a couple of years old. I've noticed in the last 6 months, as the new leaves grow, they look very light and anemic. And you can see sort of the patterns, and around the leaf patterns, it's very pale looking. And after a few days, the tips turn brown and they begin to fall off. So what I've done is I've used Miracle-Gro, once a month, and I'm following the recommended watering pattern, but yet it continues to do that. And I'm wondering perhaps if you may be aware of what the problem may be.
I'm not familiar with that species, but what you've described sounds like a nutrient deficiency, and it could and combination of things. A nutrient deficiency would show the inner veinal lighter coloring, so the veins are dark, and between the veins is lighter. Is that what you're describing?
Yes, exactly like that.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a nutrient deficiency of some sort, and the burning on the edges of the tips could be salt accumulation in the soil, and it manifests itself at the tips of the leaves. But again, I don't know that species. I'm not familiar with it. When was the last time you repotted that bonsai, did root pruning, added new soil?
Oh, you know what? Since I bought it, I haven't done that.
That might be the first thing you need to do, and I would probably do that as soon as possible, maybe February, April, when new growth just starts to come out. Typically with the bonsai, they too go a little bit dormant in the winter, and you want to revigorate them for spring growth, just as if they were outside. So I would do that and be very careful. The specialists in bonsai will take them very carefully out of the container, almost use like a chopstick to break the roots away, the soil away from the roots without damaging much of the roots, and then put in fresh soil blend for that particular species. Do a little research on it to see if they need a very, very well-drained soil or one that's a little heavier, and go from there.
And do you know where I can purchase this soil from?
You may have to do a little research on that and mix up your own, or many of the garden centers, the specialty garden centers around, will have blends for specific houseplants.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling in, Tarek. Good luck with your bonsai. We have got an email from Mary in West Branch. She says, my clematis is on my fence between the gate in the fence and the corner of the garage. Yeah, this is not at this point in time, but in the spring, it's getting too big for the space it has to grow, about four feet by 4 feet. Can I thin it out, and if so, how?
Well, those are vines, and they grow very rapidly. And if the plant itself is too big for the existing site, I think I would be inclined to dig it up and move it to a different site or location. And the best time to do that would be early spring. So as soon as the ground thaws out, it kind of dries out a little bit and becomes workable, then I would dig it up and just dig up a nice clump of dirt with the plant and move it to a different location where it can grow like it normally wants to do.
Okay. We'll go next to Ed in Iowa City. Ed, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Not a question, a comment about the mesquite tree.
Oh, okay.
May seem silly, but what about just covering it like a bird for 12 hours over the night, keep it dark inside?
You could. You could just take a box and big old box and just cover it overnight. That would be fine. I'm just not sure exactly what the plant's going to respond to 24 hours of light. It may be okay. I'm not sure about that specific plant, but you definitely could cover it with a big cardboard box.
Just
easy,
a thought.
Easy.
Well, we appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for the thought.
Bye.
We appreciate it. We'll go next to David in Iowa City. David, welcome to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
Hi, I'm looking through seed catalogs, and I'm trying to pick the best variety of red bell pepper for Iowa. Do you have any suggestions?
No, there's just plenty of bell peppers out there, and most of them perform just fine.
They do. And, you know, commercial growers are real particular about the varieties that they grow. One in particular that it's green, it's a large bell pepper, very blocky, turns red, it's called Aristotle. But as far as home gardening, just check your labels at your garden centers or in the seed catalogs. One that matures to red, they're all going to be pretty good. Just give them plenty of time to do that.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, David. Speaking about vegetables, although we're in the midst of winter, it's a good time to think about spring gardening. What do you recommend when ordering flower and vegetable seeds?
Well, there's a lot of flower and vegetable seeds on the market. Obviously, you can buy those locally at garden centers, but there are also mail order catalogs that specialize, and there's a lot of good ones there. Just as far as a few names, Twilly Seeds, Stoke Seeds, those two companies probably have the widest selection of flower and vegetable seeds. They sell both to commercial growers, greenhouse growers, and things like that, but also homeowners, and they have a huge selection of seeds, both flower seeds and vegetable seeds. And so those are very good. You also have things like Burpee and Parks, and they've been around for a long, long time. Most home gardeners are familiar with Burpee and Parks. If you're looking for maybe some heirloom seeds, you might try Seed Savers Exchange out of Decorah, Iowa. They have a lot of heirloom vegetable and flower seeds. So a lot of good companies out there, and most of them you can find on the Internet. If you just Google the term, you can just find their catalog and see what they have.
Another one is Thompson & Morgan Seed Company. If you're looking for some a little bit unusual, seeds of unusual plants. I don't know if they have mesquite, though, Richard, but they have unusual plants.
They do.
So
it's a British company, and they have some very unusual plants.
Mm-hmm. One thing I want to just not to go back to the mesquite all the time, but I was got to thinking about that mesquite. If they're native to the Southwest, used to very native to very high light intensities, and sometimes with plants, if you can't give them the intensity they need, you can increase that by the duration of the light that's on them. So what I'm thinking is maybe that 24 hours is what the plant maybe needs, or close to that, because they're not getting the light intensity that they would in its native environment. Mm. So my guess is it probably is not going to hurt them.
Okay. We have a Bill on the line from Sac City. Bill, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Well, thank you for taking my call. And in the past, you've spoken positively of the pawpaw tree, and I just wonder if that is a tree with a hard enough wood to sustain the tough higher winters that we're having, especially with the icing up. And secondly, does it bear any fruit that's beneficial to wildlife?
Explain what this tree might look like for those of us who are not familiar.
Well, it's not a big tree. I would probably call it a medium-sized tree. And it wouldn't be hardy, I don't believe, in northern Iowa. It has a fairly large leaf, and it has these rather unusual fruit. It's kind of hard to describe them. They have kind of a, I guess, banana-like flavor, and they're kind of oblong, rather irregular in shape. And wildlife definitely would eat the fruit. I would assume things like coons, for example, maybe even deer would find the fruit very appetizing. So, yeah, they definitely would. But that would be a tree. We have one here on campus at Iowa State in a courtyard in a very protected location. So it wouldn't be a tree that you'd find in northern Iowa, basically southern part of the state.
Does that answer it for you, Bill?
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
And there actually are some varieties that are basically cultivars that are grown specifically for fruit production. It's kind of a minor fruit, a very minor fruit. It's not a big-time fruit because they're very hard to ship. They don't keep very well. So
they're mushy.
Right, right. Mm. They're not like an apple where you can ship that almost anywhere. These don't ship very well. They don't keep very well. So typically you almost have to grow it yourself.
Will it withstand the icing like we're having now?
Boy, I'm not sure about their strength. I would guess it's probably medium, that I don't think it's a real strong tree like a oak, but it's not as weak as some trees like the silver maple. I'm guessing it's kind of in between.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Bill. If listeners have questions for our Extension horticulturists Richard Giron and Linda Nave, call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. High tunnel workshops. What would you explain what these are? I know we've gone over this before, Linda, but it might be good to remind listeners what they're all about and when they're held.
Well, high tunnels are these greenhouse-like structures, but they're very simple greenhouse structures because they are not typically not heated, and they're ventilated by passive ventilation. In other words, the sides roll up, the ends roll up during the summer to allow good air movement, and the plants are grown directly in the soil. They're basically a large cover over a garden. And commercial growers are using them to extend the seasons, produce high-quality vegetables, and have a lot better control over the environment, the water, the fertility, and the pests that are under that high tunnel. And many, many growers now are adapting this system to their production that they have for outdoor field production to extend the season, to hit the early market, the higher value price, and produce good quality vegetables. We are there, but it does require some knowledge and some understanding of how the system works. So for that, we are providing 7-hour workshop trainings, 2 locations coming up in February. These are sponsored by the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture. One will be held February 2nd and 3rd at the Armstrong Research and Demonstration Farm down in East Pottawatomie County by Atlantic. The other one will be held at the Marshalltown Community College on a Saturday from 9 to 5, and that is going to be held on March 6th. For more information, they can contact me at lnaeve, N-A-E-V-E, at iastate.edu. Or they can just look me up on the website at Iowa State, and I'll be able to help them get them registered. The cost is $30 per person for the 7-hour workshop, or $50 per couple. And so if anyone's interested in commercial vegetable production, interested in maybe putting in a high tunnel of various sizes, we'll be talking about the size, the selection, the site selection, soil management, pest management, and the cropping systems that they can put in.
Okay, this sounds good. The high tunnel workshops.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go to Joyce. Joyce is on the line. Welcome to, where are you located, Joyce?
Marshalltown.
Oh, Marshalltown. You had a brief input about the pawpaw tree?
Yeah, I actually planted two of them about 7 or 8 years ago. And I planted two because I was told that there needed to be two in order for the trees to bear fruit.
Okay.
One of them died. The other has lived for about 7 years now, and this is at a house where I used to live just east of Grinnell. So I guess it's kind of south central.
Okay. So maybe people might want to think about buying two then, perhaps.
Right.
All right. Well, we're out of time for this Talk of Iowa on Horticulture Day. It's been a good show, and appreciate Linda Nave and Richard Giron talking to us, and thanks for the listeners calling in. This is Talk of Iowa, is produced by Dennis Reese. We had technical support from Rosalind Sixby. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Julie Englander. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.